How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick, and as always, joined by my buddy Ronald over in España. Ronnie, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going buenos. How's it going there?
See, that's still the Spanish word that we're stuck on at the moment, eh?
Yeah, I've tried my best on Duolingo, and it doesn't work. Like, just when I think I've done something proper, I go to the pharmacy to buy some things, and then it just all goes pear-shaped. I have no idea. They have no idea what I'm saying. It's just chaos.
Got to keep working on it, Ronnie. Got to keep working on it. But yeah, don't stress too much. I had a bit of a problem with the language barrier. I was down in Bloom this weekend, and, you know, I arrived at the Airbnb we'd booked, and I phone up this guy. I'm like, yeah, good evening, Harm. And Linda just bursts out laughing next to me. The guy on the phone's like, yes, listen to this soti over here. It's Adam or Adam.
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 Yeah, no, I had a good chuckle when he told me that story. Yeah, anyways.
I'm butchered.
So, yeah, you went down to Bloemfontein, you had a burger, you met a fan. Yeah, so everything worked out for you.
Yeah, it was a lacquer weekend down in Bloem. The drive is a bit boring, you know, it's dead straight. I always say you can see your dog run away for a week in Bloemfontein. You can sit there and watch it. The land is so flat.
Yeah.
And cold, Ronnie. Holy moly, it was cold down there. Yeah, that was something to get used to. But yes, sharing a room with Linza now. I've complained about you in the past, Ronnie, and your loud-ass snore, which sounds like a bar stool being dragged through the B&B. But let me tell you, my good friend Linza that's done the travel with me this year, man needs to learn to pick a bloody snore. Because one minute it sounds like an electric fence that's tripping on a tree branch. The next minute it's like a tipper truck dumping its load in the room. It is a nightmare. Just, you know, you're getting used to the tune, then it changes.
You give all your friends such crap about snoring, you know. You give every single one of them problems. But you, my friend, are chief snorer. Chief snorer, you keep the whole Airbnb awake with yours.
Yeah, I don't believe you, Ronnie. I don't snore. I don't know what you're talking about. Shall we then go over to the international rugby from the weekend? And, you know, just out of curiosity, Ronnie, I'd love to know where you are on Super Brew. And don't lie in front of me.
I don't even know. I don't have an internet connection to check.
1,511th on the log out of 1,691. How does that feel, Ronald?
No, it's very simple. I mean, it was no fun. Like, I could see you smiling over the camera right now. You're obviously having a great time. And that's the difference, because a month ago when I was whipping you in Super Brew, you were all sad and you didn't, you know, you were, you know, it was a real downer. So I decided I need to start doing worse in Super Brew, start picking your mood up so that, you know, when the rugby championship comes around, we can really compete.
So it was a favor to the rest of us, eh? Your outside of the top 10 finish in the URC has now humbled you a little bit. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, no, it hasn't humbled me. It's just I want you guys to feel a little bit better about playing against me.
Okay. Well, I came 311. That's a whole 1,300 places ahead of you. So just don't you...
290 places after where I finished in the URC. Still got a distance to go.
You're definitely a Bulls fan now with the way you throw back to things, eh? But... shout out here on this one, Ronnie, for Kyle Ferreira or Stark on Super Brew. He came first in our pool by 0.25 points over Etienne. So well done, Stark. What a win for you in the July Internationals. And we're now going to be hosting the Rugby Championship, guys. So come join us there. Help me beat Ronnie again. It was really, really great. And the look on his face right now is absolutely worth it.
Let's carry on.
Ronnie, I'm surprised you haven't bragged about this yet, because we had Tonga hosting Spain this weekend and Tonga went down at home 20 points to 29. So if you're not going to claim it, I am. You know, rugby punted. We send Ronnie over to Spain in a consultancy role, just like I did in Dubai. And well done, Spain.
Upset.
Famous victory in Tonga.
There were two upsets that I was obviously being ridiculous with all of them. But then I called two upsets that I think are possible or probable. You know, more likely than the rest. And the one was Tonga, Spain, and the other one was Wallabies, Georgia. And, you know, I got Tonga, Spain on the money, but Wallabies, Georgia, you know, I was almost there after the first half, but then the Wallabies stepped it up again.
Yeah, well, you're talking there about the Wallabies, Georgia, so we'll jump to that one quickly. 40 points to 29 win for the Wallabies over Georgia. Like you say, it was 26 all at 65 minutes. It really looked like The Georgians were about to pull off an upset here against a Joe Schmidt side. What did you think of that one, Ronnie?
Yeah, I think I'd be a little bit concerned if I was, firstly, Warren Gatland, because the Wallabies beat Wales, in my opinion, quite convincingly. And I'd be really worried that I lost to a Wallabies outfit that for 65 minutes struggled against Georgia. But with that said, like, all credit to Georgia. It's been years and years now that they've just gotten better and stronger. And yeah, so well done to the Georgians. You know, they just couldn't finish it out there at the end. But the rugby championship coming up, I hope Joe Schmidt fixes a couple of things there.
Yeah, he's definitely now. And I mean, he said they're going to have to step up to a whole new level now with the teams that they're going to be facing in the rugby championship. But I just want to take this moment, Ronnie. You know, I got a lot of stick on social media the last week about constantly digging at the Irish. So as promised to everyone on the socials, I'm now going to turn that attention to the Wallabies. So it's really great that the Wallabies got their three wins for the year out of the way early. The rugby championship is set to kick off. And, you know, we have a friend in Australia, Lackey, over at Pick and Drive. And no, it's not Pick and Drive. What's it called?
Scrumbags.
We have our mate over in Australia, hey Ronald, over at Scrumbags, Lackey. He was a little bit cocky in the beginning of the year when Joe Schmidt signed for them. So let's take this opportunity and call out Lackey for a down dance and double or nothing on these Springbok Wallabies games coming up. Ronnie, over then to the All Blacks. They flew all the way over to the USA. They took a comprehensive 47-5 win over a pretty strong or close to full strength Fijian team there in San Diego.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much what we expected to unfold. I think the scoreline, you know, it seems about right. The All Blacks are strong and Fiji are, you know, as is the nature with those Pacific Island teams, you know, very disjointed team players coming from all over, struggling against the All Blacks, obviously. But yeah, exciting game. 7-1. And, you know, I was thoroughly entertained. In fact, I was still awake on Friday night. Could have been Saturday morning. And next thing I know, the game was on. So I watched the first 10 minutes before falling asleep again.
Yeah, no, good to see the All Blacks getting a victory like that. 7-1. The Razor era really is underway now. They've got a bit of momentum. So I'm really looking forward to the clashes we've got scheduled with them at the end of August and beginning of September. That's going to be really like in Jersey and Cape Town. But, you know, it's an experimental side. Razor still, you know, getting a squad together, seeing who fits where. You know, Bodie getting a start at 15 in this one. But I'm pretty confident the All Blacks are still going to be a team that's hellishly hard to take on.
Yeah, and it honestly, if you write the All Blacks off, it's to your own detriment, right? I mean, they've been good for decades, and they haven't just fallen away completely. They're still up near the top, and you know they'll always be, you know, iconic enough, and you know we'll always see them as our biggest foes. So, and I think Razor just adds to what their team was under Fozzie. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're rightly pointed it out there, right? The All Blacks off at your own peril. Just ask the Irish journalists how that went in the 2023 quarterfinal. And I promise that's my last dig at the Irish until November. Ronnie, then the big one, the Springboks versus Portugal down in Bloemfontein. Now, let me first tell you, the number of Portugal fans there was unbelievable. And it was so great to see them turn out in their numbers.
Yeah, it sounded quite loud when they sing the anthem. I don't know, maybe that was just across the television. But yeah, I can only imagine. So it's good to see them supporting Portugal. I think that a lot of Springbok fans also would have got in on the festivities and supported along with Portugal every now and again. Yeah, you know, that's what happens when these tier two nations come along. You know, it's fun for everyone.
You know, and I think we really need to give a bit of applause and praise to the Portugal side, you know. We spoke about them in the World Cup last year, how much they'd impressed us, beating Fiji, in fact, in the 2023 World Cup. And then they came here and they scored the opening try. I mean, you're facing the Springboks in their home country in front of a sellout crowd, and you go and score the opening try. That was, you know, really incredible to see.
We mustn't forget the fact that they're still an amateur side. They were the only amateur side to qualify for the World Cup last year. And a lot of those players don't play professionally. They have their day jobs. So for them to, you know, do as well as they did in the World Cup last year and then to come on and face the number one side in the world, according to rankings, and the world champions. Well done to them.
Yeah, very, very well done. I see they're actually ranked 15th in the world rankings at the moment. And that's really impressive for a side that's not fully professional. And you look at Wales, they're like 11th or 12th. So yeah, great for Portugal. I'd actually love to see them schedule a test against the Dragons and see how that one goes. Their brand of rugby was really exciting and really fast-paced. Yes, they may have lacked the physicality to deal with the Springboks over 80 minutes. But when they had the ball and they had space, they showed that they have the skill level to finish those opportunities.
Yeah, no, I do agree. They had a couple of hot steppers there that managed to step out of space, out of a very, you know, tiny, tiny hole and threw it. And, you know, the attack, I don't think was too poor. The defense, unfortunately, letting them down. But I think that's just the nature of an amateur side, if you will. You know, you struggle, you learn how to tackle over many, many years. And yeah, I suppose that's their biggest struggle. Because at one stage, it did look like the Springboks were just, you know, running against no opposition.
Yeah, and at times their scrum held up really well as well, which is great to see. You know, all praise to Portugal. And I think it was really great to, it would have been nice to have a third test against the Irish, but it's also great to see these tier two sides getting opportunities against the top tier sides, because that's the only way that we're going to grow the game and grow their abilities as well.
I think very simply, leading up to any sort of international season, if you will, you need your A side, your tier one A sides to be playing the tier two nations, right? So an invitational side in the lead up to an Irish series, that's where you go and you sort of blood any new youngsters and the likes. But yeah, we need to see more tier two games.
No, absolutely, Ronnie. So let's just quickly go on to the discipline issues that the Box had this weekend. You obviously got to see this on TV. I got to see it in the stadium. But first up's yellow card for Quan Horn on debut, scores a try, then also gets a card for a tackle in the air. Kirkley Arons are also getting a yellow card for croc roll. But the big one, Ronnie, Andre Esterhazen receives a red card for an incident in the second minute, which was judged to be a high tackle or head contact on Portuguese center Jose Lima, or Jose. What did you make of that, Ronnie? What did it look like on the TV?
It looked very soft on the TV, actually. It looked like a poorly timed tackle and, you know, a penalty at the very least, sure. Possibly a yellow card, but I did not think that it'd go all the way to a red. Considering previous incidents in the URC against Kirkley Arendse, for example, you know, head-to-head contact in those instances were only awarded a yellow card, but now, you know, they were a lot stricter and we went all the way to a red card. I don't know. I would have loved, and it's unfortunate that because it was in the bunker, we didn't get to see the thought process that took place and why that was awarded. Usually when before the bunker and they reviewed it over and over, you could hear the refs talking about it. But yeah, I did not think that was going to be a red card. I was very surprised by that.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me as well. And I mean, look, Rossi's come out and said, you know, they learned a lot about the team and whatever. This robbed Andre of a chance to make his case for that 12 jersey as well. But over the years, the Springboks have been renowned as a team that focuses a lot on their tackle height and how they tackle. And I think Rossi will be quite upset with the fact that two of the three cards on the day were for poor tackle technique.
Yeah, look, well, Quinn Horn, I think that was just an element of inexperience perhaps and eagerness to get across the field and make the tackle, and then he got his timing wrong. I'd say Kirtley Arons also maybe a bit of technique in that croc roll that was unfortunate. But with Andre Esterhazen too, yes, he went in a little bit upright, but you know, that I don't think was, yeah, I don't want to be too harsh on Andre Esterhazen there. I think he was hard done by. And that's the reality of it. Look, they obviously saw something that was wrong according to the textbook. They refed accordingly. I'm just very surprised by that. The thing that frustrated me, though, is, you know, going and playing against a tier two side like Portugal, as a coach and as a team, what is it that you actually want to get out of the game? You want to practice as if you were playing against the likes of New Zealand or Australia or the Argentina or England or Ireland. That's where you want to play against. And And when a player gets sent off as like Andre Esther is, and the game starts to become a bit too loose and everyone's picking and driving and trying to score a try now, you know, that's a series of individual efforts rather than a team effort, which is what we should be practicing. And I think, yeah, maybe on the defensive side, we got a lot out of it. But from the attack, I think we lost a lot with Andre going off.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there, Ronnie. You want to see a full strength team, you know, practicing their moves, their set pieces. And, you know, you lose a 12, suddenly your 10 is not getting the same opportunity either. Neither is your 13. Guys are filling in. So it does muddy the waters a little bit. Like we said, though, Andre very unlucky to receive the red in that one. And actually support for Andre coming in the form of Joe Marler from England. He was the first one to speak out on the socials about this call. So yeah, we're going to get on to some players now, but I was quite disappointed. You know, Salman Murat's first cap as captain of the Springboks. Yes, leading a young and inexperienced team, but he missed the most tackles out of any player on the day, Ronnie. And that's a bit of a worry for me.
Yeah, for me, the jury's still a little bit out with Salman. Look, I think he's a very strong and physical player. Like I said, I think Akhir perhaps overshadowed him. Akhir had an incredibly big game. But one thing to Salman's credit, his lineouts were, he took, you know, he was excellent at calling those lineouts, catching all of them, and for the lineouts operated quite well with him. But yeah, jury for me is still out, and I hope he proves me wrong.
Yeah, and I think when you look at a team like this that's been put together for a fixture like this, yes, there were some really, really top quality backs, especially in the back line. But, you know, it's often that it's the guys are a bit overzealous. They're getting their first opportunity. They're trying to do a bit too much, trying to show, you know, and put their hand up, and it loses a bit of the sort of team cohesiveness that you see in the front line starting 23 that you regularly see. So it must be judged under that light as well, Ronnie. But a player I want to talk about, because there's a lot going on social media in regards to him as well, is Marnie Lubbock. So Marnie came into this test, you know, he played all the Springboks tests at the World Cups as the starting 10 up until the semi-final. And then, you know, this game, he struggled with his kicking again. And when I was going through the stats, I was surprised to see Marnie did not make one tackle in the game against Portugal.
Yeah, oh, look, I wouldn't think too much about that, considering it's, you know, it's difficult for a second tier nation to be very effective and perhaps hit that inside channel, that first channel, that fly half channel regularly in attack. They definitely send it wider. And considering Andre Estes went off, they would have tried to capitalize on that space outside. But yes, Marnie Lubbock is a definite concern. He pulls the ball. So anything from the left-hand side of the field, that's, you know, he struggles. He can't kick that. And I don't know why that is, because he's a brilliant attacking 10. And I'd love for him to just be confident enough to slot those kicks and then to play well in attack as well. But everything from the left-hand side of the field, he just hooks the ball. He needs to aim a little bit more right.
Yeah, and he's definitely in his head now. Something needs to be done there to rectify the kicking, because you just pointed it out. He's a fantastic running 10. He can distribute that ball. Let's not forget that no-look cross kick in the World Cup against Scotland. I mean, Marnie is a quality player. And the goal-kicking woos have only come from since he debuted for the box. Prior to that, he was the top point scorer in the URC. So something's amiss, something can be fixed, but let's hope that happens sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
Ronnie, then rounding out the weekend's international action, we had Chile go down at home 11 points to 52 against Scotland. Kyle Rowe scoring 2 tries on debut for the Scots. But I saw a really nice post on the socials from a Chilean father saying, you know, it was absolutely incredible to see a tier one side playing in Chile. The players at club level and school level that came out to watch that game really got to see what a professional side looks like for the first time, not on a TV screen. And I think that's been the theme of the July internationals. It's really been great to see a number of tier two teams getting quality opposition for a change.
Yeah, the challenge, of course, with these, because we'd all love to see this. I'd love to see a Six Nations of Tier 2 sides, right? So the 6 best Tier 2 sides all competing in a tournament annually, like, you know, we do with the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship. The problem is funding, right? So these teams don't necessarily have the money to take them all around the world to play these tests. But maybe you could you could host a tournament somewhere in the world and have these teams play more regularly. Because you're right, it is cool seeing Chile, and it is cool seeing Portugal and Uruguay and a lot of these, and Spain as well. Like, all credit to them. They went over to the Pacific Islands and they bloody well won a game there. So it's fantastic to see. And that's the only way we grow our sport and move away from, you know, 10 tier one sides, 11 tier one sides, and no one else.
Yeah, that's true, Ronnie. And another one that took place a bit more of a regular fixture, though, was Uruguay versus Argentina. Argentina scoring a 79-5 victory there with 12 tries. So quite a comprehensive one from Los Pumas. And then Japan, Eddie Jones going down 14-42 against the Italians. It's not his year, hey?
No, it's not. And I really feel sorry for him because I do believe he's a brilliant coach. And he's just made some really stupid calls. You know, although I don't really know what to make of it. And I don't really want to bash the guy, but the guy's really just not going his way.
No, it's true, Ronnie. It's true. A little bit of karma for what he did to the Aussies, possibly, but we're not going to get into that. Then I want to go over the box squad hopefuls. So these are the debutants that we had in the few tests that have been there. Which of them we think are going to make it into the rugby championship squad that's to be named tomorrow. You know, by the time this episode comes out, that squad will have been named. But before I do, I just want to let the listeners know there's no Springbok rugby coming up this weekend. So Ronnie and I are going to take a week's break. There won't be an episode next week, but we'll be back to give the Wallabies a lot of shit the week thereafter. So yeah, Ronnie, let's get onto it then. Let's bounce them between the two of us. So the first up is Ben Jason Dixon. What did you think of his time in the Bok jersey? Is he making the cut for the rugby championship?
You know, I see a lot of people raving about him, and he's very physical and he's very strong. And I think he had a good game against Portugal. But for me, you know, it's difficult using Portugal as a test, you know, to see what a player is really made of. But yeah, look, he's a potential outsider, and I actually do think that he's most likely going to be included.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to make the cut, but like you said, you know, it's an investment for the future. He's been exposed to the environment now playing against Wales and Portugal, and I think, you know, there's someone that can step in when the likes of Peter Steff de Toy and them are unavailable. Ivan Roos, Ronnie, so he's not really a debutant, but he's a player that's still very much looking for a spot in that Springbok squad. Do you think his performances in the absence of Dwayne and Jasper have justified his inclusion?
Look, I wouldn't say he's playing terribly, but I would say his competition is playing perhaps a little bit better than Ivan Roos right now. I do still like him. You know, 2 years ago, he was exceptional, but I think there's perhaps a confidence issue there. And he's trying to play too much of an individual game at the moment, often getting away and isolating himself away from his support. So he's very quick, and he can barnstorm down the field, and that's fantastic to see. But I think, you know, like I just mentioned, Ben Jason Dixon and other Lucies, Ivan Roos might be a little bit in trouble.
Yeah, I think especially since Jasper will be back from his ban now, we've got Quagga Smith covering there. I don't think that Ivan's going to make the rugby championship cut either. And then another loose forward, Ronnie, is Pepsi Buthelezi. So Pepsi got his debut this week in the sixth jersey against Portugal. You know, he's bided his time and taken his opportunity. I think it's still early in his career. He's still early in the box setup. So I don't think he's going to make the cut either, but also definitely a player that we're investing in for the future, you know, and likely probably a call up later in the championship to face Argentina.
I actually don't have much to add to that. I completely agree with everything that you said.
Morne van den Berg, Fuff's understudy, as people are now referring to him. What did you make of his performance against Portugal? And is he making the cut?
Yeah, he's in the very unfortunate position because we have 150 scrum-offs at the moment all competing for one role or one position or for four positions. So if he can do well, not only at nine, but perhaps outside on the wings as well, then I'm sure he'll be getting included. But I think there's too many scrum-offs that are ahead of him with a little bit more experience. But next season or the season thereafter, sure.
Yeah, like you say, we have a lot of scrum-offs in the Springbok setup, and often the experience is cast quite wide there. But I agree with you, also one for the future. Then Ronnie, captain from the weekend, Salman Murat. So He's not new to the box setup either. He's been in and out of the camp. He missed the World Cup due to injury. The Stormers captain, but I think he's going to get an opportunity. He's going to be included in the tour, especially the likes of Sos being out, Lewitt being out, Sean Clain being out. And this is really his chance now where he needs to put his hand up and say, you know what, I'm here. Don't overlook me. I can bring exactly what these other guys bring to the table. So Salman's going to get that chance, and I'd love to see him put his hand up.
Agreed. And you're absolutely right. He's also in this unfortunate position because we also produce a lot of locks. Although, based on previous years, we're probably a little bit light in depth there. And Salman, sure, put your hand up. Now's your opportunity.
Ronnie, then over to the front row where young Jan Hendrik Wessels had a game this weekend. You know, he's quite a mobile prop, strong scrummager now, packing down at loose head, something he doesn't normally do. However, Steven Kitsoff is now fit and ready to return to play. So I think that might have an effect, and he's probably not going to make the cut for the tour to the Wallabies.
Sure. And I do agree. Very exciting player. Like you say, mobile. And that's what Rusty and the likes are looking for. You know, players that add a little bit of extra. So sure, let's see where the road takes him. It's nice that we've included him now already.
Then, Ronnie, we've extended the squad depth to 4 or 5 if you still count Joseph Dweba. André Hoogeventer got his debut this weekend in his hometown of Bloem and in front of his father, another father-son duo having represented the box. Will he be making the cut for the Wallabies tour?
I don't know. If you consider Johan Krobler, right? I think Johan Krobler is probably pipped ahead of André Hoogeventer. Right, so Krobler, I looked at that and I saw, man, this guy's got some wheels on him because he ran a diagonal line, cut off as a defender and cut off the attack really quickly, which I don't think, you know, Bongi and Malcolm Marks are not that mobile, not that fast. And I don't know if that was just a once-off from Krobler, but I think Krobler takes or pips Hoogeventer for that hooker position.
Yeah, so you've spoken about them both there. So just to wrap that up, Malcolm Marks will be available for the box in the second test against the Wallabies. So Johan Krobler, I agree, is probably in line for bench role against the Wallabies in the first test and then moving down to third in the pecking order once Malcolm is available again. But great to see we're building some depth there because that was a big area of concern when we went to the 2019 World Cup and ended with Dion Ferreira filling the shoes there.
Absolutely.
Apalele Fassie, Ronnie, has he done enough? I mean, we raved about him in the Wales game, his ability under the high ball. Against Portugal, though, some defensive lapses, going absent in the game a little bit. Will he be making the cut?
I'm going to say probably not. And the reason is because we need Vili, right? We need Vili to impart some of his experience, wisdom, and knowledge. And the inclusion of Damien Willemse at some point. You know, Fassie's most likely on the fringe, but just off outside. So I wouldn't bet on it at the moment. He's maybe got, you know, when Vili Leroux eventually steps out and stops playing and retires, then Fassie will be a permanent inclusion in the squad.
Yeah, I think the selection call there is going to come down to, do we take Fassie or do we take Marnie? Because you've got Sasha that can play backup in both of those roles. And I think the choice there lands on Marnie over Fassie. So I think Fassie's going to miss the cut. Quan Horn, Ronnie, he also got his debut this weekend. Try scorer, then carded. Bit of an up and down. Is he going to make the cut?
I don't think so. I think maybe it's still a season or two too soon. He reminds me a lot of Jesse Creel, though, which is exciting.
Yeah, I also think there's huge potential there, but not really in line for that selection to the Wallabies tour. What about Mchunu, Ronnie? He got some more game time this weekend as well. He also made his debut in Bloem against Wales a few years ago. I think him and Jan Hendrik Wessels are fighting it out, but I think the return of Kitsi means he's also not likely going to make the cut.
Yeah, probably not with Kitsi returning, but you know, one injury in and he's immediately into the squad. So again, very close, very, very close. And I'm pretty confident he's going to be in our World Cup squad 2027. I mean, the man's a beast.
And then the big one, Ronnie, Sasha Ngomezulu. I actually felt guilty putting him on this list because he's guaranteed going on this tour. What a season he's having.
honestly, what a season. And he's playing with the confidence of a very mature player. And, you know, just looking at how Rassi and Tony Brown laugh in the coaching box every time Sasha does something, the man's definitely in.
Yeah, definitely, definitely in. So, Ronnie, then a bit of a shout out to the England under-20s. They claimed the title down in the Cape this weekend, beating France on Friday night to get it. So well done to them. The box squad will be announced on Tuesday. So when the guys listen to this episode, you guys will already know the squad and whether or not our predictions there are right. But yeah, Peter Steph De Toey, Malcolm Marks will both be available when we face the Wallabies in the second test. So great that their injuries are not too severe. And then, Ronnie, the big news this week is Ardie Sevea having signed for Moana Pacifica. Big move, great for Moana. Probably not great for Ardie in the long-term career prospects, though.
Well, he did say in his chat with Big Jim that he was looking to go back home to Moana Pacifica and applying his trade there. So, yeah, look, he's doing what he always has wanted to do. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, let's just also clarify, when he's going back to Moana Pacifica, they are based in Auckland. So it's not like it's a big...
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true.
But I think his name lends a lot to their brand. And it's rumored that Vi Fifita is also about to sign there. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes of that and if they can build some squad depth. Ronnie, the May Fokchor moment of the week. This was a hard one to pick because some really great tries on the weekend. But I think, you know, there really is only one, and that is Spain beating Tonga in Tonga. That is really impressive for me, and well done to Spain.
Excellent.
Well, guys, that's it for today's episode.
Thanks for joining for the banter and staying for the chat. May Fokchor, dit was lekker.
Make sure you smash that like button and subscribe on your preferred listening platform so you won't miss a moment of the madness.
Catch you back here next Wednesday.